Welcome, and thanks for tuning in. You must be pondering some fantasy sports questions. Well, good news, because you just turned into another episode of Keepers, Sleepers, and Creepers with John and Paul. All right, John. We're breaking in the post-All-Star break period of our podcast. And are you ready?
I think I'm ready.
I'm ready.
It's exciting to see how things usually shift right after the All-Star break, because then you start getting those buyers, the sellers, all the trade deadline stuff. You also get people that just have had bad first halves that a lot of people forget about and don't look at them as the player they probably were expected to be preseason.
Right.
So I think there's a lot of time for people to regress and also make up for lost time.
Yeah.
It's interesting to see.
I'm excited for it. And plus, now we're getting closer to the playoffs, which is what it's all about, you know.
Absolutely.
Bringing home the prize.
Yeah, and that's also to say this is where you start having to look at the playoffs and roster construction, and if you have these deep benches, it's time to trade,
right?
Because you really want to be getting as many people as you can get in your starting roster.
Right.
A lot of these people have lingering injuries and you're not sure how they're going to play. It might be better to cut ties with them, trade them away, especially if you're trying to make a playoff push and you're behind in the standings. So it's time to move.
Time to move, because the trade deadline's approaching. Once the trade deadline hits, our tips are going to be a lot less useful because we're telling you what to do with them. So,
yeah, it's true.
But you've tuned in to another episode of Keepers, Sleepers, and Creepers, where we tell you those three categories. We break them down with our own terms, keepers being people we believe to be legit, or in this episode, we believe to be legit for the second part of the season.
Mm-hmm.
Sleepers, people that didn't turn out so hot in the first half, but we think they have a good chance coming around in the second half. Creepers being people that maybe had an exaggerated first half, and I don't see it happening again in the second half. Or people that are bad.
Got a plenty of those.
So, and we're doing well. That's why we do this for you, because we're doing well and we want you to do well. And we love to talk about fantasy sports. And now football's right around the corner, and that's what we're really talking about out off the podcast. So
It's true. Almost time to start shifting gears a little bit in that regard. But
which we let you down with our rankings for baseball. We never got them publicized. They existed, but they were never available to you guys. But we're going to have a dang website for fantasy football.
One day this will happen. And I think that day is approaching.
Our goal is by August.
Yeah.
So I've already got my running backs ranked.
It's a beautiful thing. You're set. I'm a little behind on that, but, you know, I'll have it ready before the website, so we'll be okay.
Yeah. And, of course, it's tentative. Spring training hasn't even happened yet. And the biggest thing is spring training comes injuries. And
yeah, the landscape will change before the preseason even starts with a lot of people. There's always one major injury in the preseason every year. And then you got a lot of people where the depth charts shake out a lot differently than what you think, or a person plays really good in preseason that you haven't really heard of. Might even change the dynamic.
Spring training?
Yeah.
That's funny.
But that's okay.
We're on baseball.
This is baseball. Makes it easier for this transition.
Shoot. All right. So, in honor of our name and the title of the show, we always start with keepers when it comes to baseball. And who's a keeper you want to mention for the second half of the All-Star break?
I had a couple of keepers that I really like, and I was really just wanted to mention one of the big names first. That I didn't expect to be saying at this point in the first half, but I just have to give him a lot of credit. Josh Bell.
Yeah.
I mean, at some point, I have to be like, he's going to be a top-notch, first-round-esque talent based on the way he's played, and I have seen absolutely no indication that he is not going to be at least very good in the second half.
Yeah.
I find it hard to believe that he won't... I'll find it hard to believe if he can continue this exact pace with this exact batting average with this lineup around him,
right,
with everything in Pittsburgh.
Especially when Marte gets traded, which I think he will,
and stuff
like that. But
he's done it almost all year with a minimal supporting lineup anyway.
Anyways.
Like, Marte's been injured for a large period of the time anyway. But he just has a perfect advanced stat profile in almost every regard.
Yeah.
He has an incredible stat line to go around with it. He's one of the best RBI leaders in the league. I think he is the top RBI leader in the league at this point.
I would say so, with 84 RBIs.
It's absolutely staggering. And he has the age where he's rounding into his prime to support that this could have been a true breakout season.
That's why he was on my list on the preseason, but dang it, I couldn't get a hold of him.
Yeah. I did have him, and then cut him.
Well, you weren't as high on him as I was in the preseason, though.
Also true. But His production potential, his age, all of it lines up. Advanced stat profile shows he's hitting the ball super duper hard. His numbers, basic stats say he's hitting the ball super duper hard. I think he's just, you got to enjoy the gem you got. For anyone that had him at 193-ish in Yahoo leagues yeah. in the draft, or got him in the early part of the season, like maybe in my leagues where you picked him up when I cut him.
Yeah.
You're welcome.
Yeah.
For I mean, MVP candidate.
For a slugger, I just love him, especially up and coming. If he works in the offseason and improves his kind of fly ball rate a little bit, dude will be killing even more home runs. It'll be staggering because his launch angle is the only thing that's kind of holding him back from putting up even more insane numbers. But I'm not even going to complain. I like the people at Hitline Drives. I think anybody in the world is more than satisfied with what he's done to this point in the season. And the coolest thing about him is he's had a career worst for strikeout percentage at 21%. So he's usually in the 19s in that area. So.
Yeah, and even when I was looking back at his previous seasons, he's improved every season in almost every category that you could possibly measure, which is a good thing to see. I mean, the jump didn't make sense to be this good this year, right out of nowhere, but it makes sense. Like, he's improved consistently as a young player. And
any home run hitter that's supposedly doing a personally bad job at striking out and they're only at 21%, sign me up.
For real, though.
And he's walking at 10.6 clip, so...
Yeah,
he's gonna be good.
I think he's a true stud.
And in the same facet, Rafael Devers.
Man, yeah.
He's got literally pretty much the same profile as Josh Bell.
And he has a much better lineup around him, so he actually has help.
Right. He brings a little bit of the stolen base stuff. He's a little bit above average speed. He brings you a little bit batting average, but. I mean, both those guys are just, if you have both of them at your corner infield positions, then you are just so, you're looking good. And don't even make a move. You want to keep these dudes. And you don't want to trade for them either because that's going to be a staggering price. So. But he's batting second in that lineup in Fenway, like you're talking about. His advanced profile looks great too. He's striking out a 15.7 clip, which is personal best, and then walking at 7.6. I mean, if he had a higher launch angle, too, with more fly ball rates than he, too, would be, especially in Fenway, hitting lots and lots of homers. So,
yeah.
Both those guys, I see positive trends.
I completely agree. I think they're both clearly keepers. I mean, I will always say that my general formula is the fact if a person's playing this far over the preseason projections for both of these, some regression is probably likely.
Yeah.
But... it will never be to the degree, with everything they've proven and everything I had to look at, that it will be a meaningful decline in which you still don't want to own this person.
Right, like, who are you... Yeah, I think they'll decline a little bit, but who's going to outperform Devers on the season? Like, are you going to go get Arenado? That's great if he can. I mean,
that's actually what you're talking about. Yeah, that's a perfect way to put it, is because trading these people away, you're never going to get the return that's going to help you for the playoff run. And in many cases, I think it's so smart to try to trade up for quality value and production for more players, especially with the way free agency has looked. So, yeah, you could probably get a trade down, especially if you have a lot of injuries. Maybe that is a possibility for you to do, where you can fill in a lot of gaps for people that were very good on your team to trade away these guys. But you better be getting a king's ransom.
Yeah. Like,
and I just think that's very hard to actually make happen in fantasy.
For sure. Yeah, those two guys, if you drafted them or got them in free agency, you're doing yourself a solid, and the same with the next guy. But who do you got more?
The next one I've got is a guy that hasn't been nearly as studly, but I think he's a guy that I think is worth investing in. I think he's going to be a good second half rebounder, and that's going to be Blake Snell, Tampa Bay Rays pitcher, previous Cy Young Award winner in the AL last season with some of the most unbelievable numbers. But this season he's on 95 innings pitch, 5 wins, 126 Ks, 4.55 ERA, and 127 WHIP. That's so far above what he was last season, and you talked about him before the season as well as being a person that regression was almost imminent because his numbers were out of this world good.
Right.
But yeah, I think both you and me are blown away by the fact, and me more so because I thought he was very much worth the draft price. I think I just look at him and I see his K rate still way over his innings pitched. His advanced stat profile, talking about his fastball velocity and his fastball spin, is all way above average. It's still looking very okay. He should be in line from a stuff standpoint to still be as good as what he was. His walk rate's also just as good as it was last year, and he has a team with great pedigree for growing pitchers out there in Tampa Bay. So I don't feel like it was a fluke. to a, the nth degree last season. Mm-hmm. I think it's a little more of a fluke this year with the way he's playing. I think his ERA at least goes down a whole point and a half, and he gets right about down to 3.2, probably about 3.2, 3.3, something like that on the season, and he'll be under that the whole second half. So if you can get him for a trade, I think he would be worth it.
Sure. Well, the other guy I was getting that pretty much profiles exactly like Devers does, just, you know, less barrel, but that's just what he's done his whole career, is DJ LeMahieu, which I raved about a few podcasts back, but I got to bring him up again for the All-Star break. And, I mean, batting leadoff in the New York lineup, plenty of at-bats, so he's going to get you tons of runs. His launch angle and his ground high fly ball rates, not studly, but when he hits the ball that consistently hard all the time in New York, he's going to get a share amount of home runs. And when the lineup's turning over that much, you're already seeing the amount of RBIs that he's accumulating as well. Mm-hmm. I think another batting title's in line. And you could potentially have Devers, Bell, and LeMahieu on your team for free to nothing. And if you did, then you've done well.
Yes. Yes. I can't argue at all with DJ LeMahieu. I mean, he has a pedigree as well in Colorado. A lot of people didn't probably trust him because Colorado, that everyone thought that was why he was playing
well,
so
good. Well,
and
plus they had like a stupid kind of logjam, it looked like, to begin the season until all the injuries hit.
Correct. You know. Absolutely. And so he's exceeded all my expectations, but also he has enough behind him to think this isn't super fluky. And yeah. Like you said, the lineup's getting so much healthier.
Right.
He played most of the season playing this well, mm-hmm. with less support than he will ever have the rest of the second half. So I completely agree. His runs scored, his batting average, and his RBI are all going to be so dang good from his perspective in that lineup.
So
gotta own him.
Yeah, for sure. And he's another guy that, good luck trading for him without giving up.
It'll be so hard.
Right.
But he's one of those guys that, I mean, if we get to some of our creepers that might be a little higher in the rankings, maybe you can make some like that flip with a package deal or something, but it's going to be a little tough.
Sure.
I don't know if he's a great person to target beyond just because of what you have to give up to get him, because he's so stable.
Sure. All right, all right. What else you got in keeper land?
I'm going to go with Corey Seager. I think he's another guy that is a good guy to look to acquire. He hasn't played much at all this season due to injuries. But when he's been healthy, two seasons ago, because he's basically been nonstop hurt,
yeah,
he was an excellent shortstop.
Yeah.
And he brought you a great batting average, a little bit of power, RBI. He's in a good lineup out there mm-hmm. with LA. Not nearly as good as something like New York or something.
Yeah.
But definitely not weak. And I just look at him, and he's looking like he's healthy. And even with all the injuries this season, he still has 8 home runs.
Right.
So he's not really even that far behind his home run totals. He might even be slightly ahead based on his at-bats if you break down the math and everything. So I just think he's due for a really good second half. And it's just kind of a matter of, could he really get hurt again? Because I don't think one person can absorb that much luck.
See, and I disregarded percentages when I did this special for the Pep post All-Star break, so I actually had him as a sleeper just because of how little he performed in the first half.
That's fair.
And, you know, I had him on a creeper list, I believe. I don't know, we'd have to go all the way back to that podcast, but I think I was creeping on him on the off-season a little bit.
Yeah,
It was because literally what I saw was so much rust they had to shake off, and it shows in his advanced stats that he just wasn't hitting the ball well. But before he went to the IL, it looked like he was the Corey Seager of old, and the one that I'm going to be looking to draft next year for sure. He's going to come back from the IL. I don't know how many games it's going to take him, he's going to probably finish as one of the better shortstops in the second half, because I think there's a lot of overperforming shortstops. And if you got one of those overperforming shortstops, deal him away, pick up Seager. And I think he's going to reward you in the second half, especially as Pollock's back and that lineup's going to keep getting healthier too. And I think there'll be plenty of opportunity for him in Los Angeles. So I got him as a sleeper just because, whereas my keepers, they performed so well in the first half, this is a dude that you could potentially go get.
I think that's completely fair to rank him there. And I'm glad you brought up the point that I think is most important, is there's so many shortstops that have overperformed in the first half.
Yeah.
And some of them have already started falling off when you're looking at the Paul DeJongs for the Cardinals.
I think it's DeJong.
DeJong? Okay.
Not that it matters. We never done it right.
I think that's actually his name in my head, is that those three pronunciations strung together, because I have no confidence whatsoever. So apologies.
I could be wrong too. It's not like I'm speaking confidently.
But anyway, I agree. But he is a guy that's already fallen off. He started so hot earlier on in the season. Like Elvis Andrews, another guy. Tim Anderson for the White Sox also played to an unreal degree in the first half.
Man, those trades I made worked out so well, but I don't even know. I think I probably broadcasted them. In my big league, when you're kind of doubting me, I sent away Tim Anderson for Ketel Marte.
Yeah.
Mitch Haniger for Nelson Cruz.
Yeah, that worked out.
And it has not worked out yet, but I do believe in the second half it will work out with Jose Ramirez when I gave up Eugenio Suarez, Wilson Contreras, and Ketel Marte. So I'm looking forward to that and see how that's playing off.
Yes, I think that's a good point. And Anderson's been hurt, but we'll see when he comes back. But I think Seager is going to be a guy that outperforms all those people. And mm-hmm. I think you could arguably trade, DeJong, but I think the other two for sure you could trade for Seager. And, yeah. And there's a handful
of others. I don't
think
I would give up Ketel Marte for Seager.
Not Marte. Okay. I completely agree. But I was just talking to Anderson and Elvis Andrews as well. Like those tier of guys that were okay. Rated at the beginning of the year and then broke out big time in the first half, were huge contributors for your fantasy team. Yeah. I think Seager's just going to be a little better than them in the second half.
Yeah. For sure. What else? You got any more keepers?
I'll just give an honorable mention to Matt Chapman just because I like him.
Yeah,
like, he's not really going to perform much better than he did in the first half.
He's just a great guy.
Yeah, he is. Like, I just didn't know he hit the ball that hard. Mm-hmm. Like, I thought he was just a really solid contributor in all aspects, and he is. But he's still top five in exit velocity and hard hit percentage among qualifiers. Yeah. Like, great team pedigree for getting on base, so he gets a lot of RBIs in there. He hits for more power than I thought he would.
If you're in a fielding percentage league, he's like the best fielder in baseball. So
yes, truly a complete player. I'm just a big fan.
Yeah. Sweet. Well, let's move on to sleepers. And you already heard one of mine being Corey Seager. So what's a sleeper you got?
I think surprisingly, I'm going to put a person on here that I hate. And it's Lorenzo Cain. I mentioned him, I think, like last week or the week before. But I think in the second half, he's a guy that's going to give you good batting average and good runs scored. And at this low, low price of he's being cut in a lot of leagues, I think he's a good guy. I think he's going to be outperforming his .250 batting average on the year for sure. His expected batting average already on the year is .278. So he's underachieved with a little bit of bad luck at like by 28 points there. His career average is .289, so it should even come up higher than that. And he hit .308 last year. So all of that ranges to there's going to be some improvement in the batting average area. Yeah. The lineup for the Milwaukee Brewers at the top end is good. And so if he's hitting at the top of that lineup, that should come back as well. But I will say his stolen base numbers are not going to come up to where they probably need to be. I think he might be like a 23 stolen base guy.
I'll give you this. If you're saying he's a sleeper in the guards, that he's been cut and he shouldn't have been, I agree with that. Mm-hmm. But I have not given up much at all to get that dude.
I would agree. I think he's a guy that will outperform how he's done in the second half. And I think that makes him a sleeper. But yes, if you're talking about his preseason draft rankings, he's not going to get up to that.
No.
At all.
I don't even know if he'll finish the season in top 100. Yeah, I don't know if he'll finish the season a top 100 player.
It might be tough.
I'd be very surprised if it was top 75.
It might be tough.
But if he's out there for free, then yeah, he should pick up. Mm-hmm. Since it looks like he's getting back to the leading off and whatever. I don't care. He's very unintriguing. I mean, you could arguably say, who do you want, Chu or Kane for the rest of the season? And I'd probably take Chu, which is incredible.
I think I'd go Kane, but I mean, Chu's good too. It's a pretty good debate, to be honest. And I mean, there's a lot of outfielders, so it does reduce some of his value in that regard, but
yeah.
I think he'll be a strong contributor.
Maybe. What other sleeper? Sleeper land.
I'm actually going to mention your dude, Liam Hendricks. I think it looks like he's probably going to be their closer the rest of the second half with the way that he's playing. I know Treinen's there, but with the way he's played, I don't know how you could ever hand it back over to him without him blowing five or six consecutive saves here for Hendricks. I mean, we've been through his numbers a little bit earlier, but his 1.21 ERA and his 1.0 whip with a K rate that's well above his innings pitched, sign me up.
Yeah.
He's been excellent. I think he's just going to be an elite closer.
Yeah, I feel so good owning him right now.
My goodness, he's so dang good. So appealing right now.
Yeah. Sucks for Treinen owners, but if you would have listened to my, although I never published my closer list, I would have told you that he was an overrated closer, and John would have agreed, and that happened early on in the season.
Mm-hmm. In preseason, we talked about him being a little overrated because it just seemed like his numbers were like Blake Snell disgusting, but it was so out of nowhere in his career that I just didn't even know what happened.
It's not like he's some young guy. He's been around the league, so it was fakey. But here's a young guy that hasn't been around the league that everybody was drafting like crazy, and if you look at his numbers from the first half, you did not get what you're drafting him for, and that's Vlad Guerrero Jr. Mm-hmm. 29 runs scored, 8 homers, 25 RBIs, batting .245. He is destined to have a better second half. And it's going to be a very good second half to me. If you can trade for this guy, I would do it. He's going to be playing in Toronto. That's great. Toronto's a little bit slow to warm up. So once that warms up, the ball's going to jump out a little bit more. He's going to be batting around second. That's awesome for plate appearances. And his advanced profile has been bland just because of how bland his hitting has been. But for it to be still that elevated in the exit velocity and the hard hit percentage isn't in the lower tenths and stuff like that, that means he's still producing, and even the his BABIP and everything, a little bit of bad luck, maybe a little bit of not the best contact, but second half, he's going to be the dude that everybody, he was the number one prospect hitting-wise, mm-hmm. and it's going to turn around. So go ahead and go get that guy.
He's very intriguing to me. I don't know how much I'd be willing to give up to get him at this point, but he is a person that has great appeal because of his talent being off the charts. It's just a matter of, will he get it together this year? Will it be next year? And I think I'm a little more along the lines of, I think he gets it together next year. But if you have a guy that goes out and trades for him, I completely get it. Because right now, he's gonna overperform what he has done. Mm-hmm. I completely agree with you on that. So, yeah.
I could still see him hitting 25 home runs.
Yeah, I agree. It's just a matter of what that batting average will look like, the RBIs in that lineup for Toronto.
And I think I'm even less worried about the average. I think his average is going to look closer to .200. For the second half, I think it looks around .290, and I don't know what that gets him. Maybe that brings it up to, I don't know.
.260, .270, something like that?
Something like that. But anyways,
yeah,
I could see him hitting like that.
I could see it.
17 homers, batting .290.
For sure.
It'd be crazy, but it could happen.
I could see it. I don't think that's outrageous by any means.
There you go. If you have somebody like Josh Donaldson, I would be looking to make that trade.
Yeah, buddy. He's definitely one of the ones I like as a sleeper. I mean, he's an ex-MVP candidate, and the big knock on him is injury problems constantly. I mean, he's not going to be the MVP candidate he used to be.
No, I'm talking about like a trade Josh Donaldson for Vlad Guerrero Jr.
Oh, I wouldn't do that, actually.
I would.
I love Josh Donaldson in the second half. He's one of my sleepers.
How about that?
So he's one of those guys I think he profiles very similarly to what Guerrero could be if they both play well. Donaldson has risks, so I don't want to say that he's an automatic lock because of his injury history and he stayed healthy the whole first half. But I think power numbers are looking like they should come from his advanced stat profile, and he still contributed very well with a young Atlanta lineup that I think he has primed for him to be overachieving in the second half. So I don't have much else to say besides I really like him. I think he's good.
There you go. How about that? I had no idea. Like we said, we have a list of players, and then we add some to it. That's the most we talk to. We don't see where they're at, but no idea you're going to be talking about Josh Donaldson. That's random.
I like him.
How about it? Well, I'm going to stick with the third base theme, and another sleeper I have just because of how underachieving he did in the first half of the season is Eugenio Suarez. And I still think he could maybe knock out 45 home runs or something like that.
45 home runs?
Yeah, maybe.
I think so too, actually.
So, I think his average is going to come up a little bit. Lineup should be overall more productive for on a whole for the second half. Although I know it's not a whole true second half, but nonetheless, Eugenio Suarez is another guy that you could be able to upgrade to pretty easily if you're needing help at third base.
Mm-hmm. I completely agree with that. I mean, he's basically improved all three of his previous years, and I know that's eventually going to come to an end. He's not just going to infinitely improve at the like 10% better production at every major statistic for every year for the rest of his career. But I do like him a lot. He has mm-hmm. ballpark on his side. He mm-hmm. has pretty good supporting lineup cast, and at least he's not alone in the lineup. And then I think the fact that his power numbers have increased as much as they have, I think that will be what is more stable. And I still think he hits around, 35, 40 home runs in this lineup. I just hope his batting average gets up a little more. But I think somewhere between 260 and 280 is right where you're going to get him.
Yeah.
And that's a good player.
Yeah. Cool. Who else are you sleeping on?
I'm sleeping on Sonny Gray. Our man, Sonny Gray. I sporadically peppered him in throughout pretty much the whole first half, about every 3 weeks, being like, please pick him up. Made the All-Star game as an alternate this year, but I just think all the stats really outline very well.
Yeah.
And last season, he had inconsistency on his side to as much of a degree as you could possibly have. I mean, he just basically couldn't pitch in New York Stadium.
No.
So he's here, and he's pitching better at home in this, and I think he just has it all primed to be a good contributor in the second half as well. I don't know if it'll be much better, but I still think he's underrated.
Yeah.
And when you're looking at certain people, like...
He never really burns you.
I haven't been burned much by him. I mean, his bad games are like 6 ERA sort of games, so he's not getting meltdown starts. Like some people, like Shane Bieber, who are viewed way higher because of strikeout rate, and I understand that. But Bieber just loses you weeks by himself when he actually decides to implode. Or a lot of these other players that are like Yu Darvish that are owned in just about as many leagues, and I just don't understand it.
Yeah.
Because it's just name and strikeout numbers. But I think Gray is just going to be a better contributor than a lot of them.
Oh, that's cool. If you're a starting pitcher kind of guy, that sounds like a good name to me. What else? You got anybody else?
I got Matt Olson. I think I talked about him a little bit too. I think he's going to be one of the premier power hitters.
Got a lot of athletics over yonder.
I really do, oddly. They're not a team I particularly...
Must mean they're going to the World Series.
I wouldn't say that. But what I would say is I love Matt Chapman. I love Matt Olson. And I think they have themselves some real talent all over their ball club. Matt Olson is going to be a guy that doesn't help you a whole lot from a batting average perspective, though, so just be prepared for that. But I think his RBI and his home run totals are going to be excellent in the second half. And Matt Olson's really gotten off to the start that I was hoping he would in the first half here. But now with a finally looking healthy body of his, I think it's going to be all power all day. And I think you can get him for a pretty cheap price. So I think that's what makes him a big sleeper in my book.
Right on. You got anybody else you're sleeping on? I'm out. A lot of names.
That's all. I'll just throw in an honorable mention for Malik Smith again and Justin Upton, too.
Sure.
I like them both in the second half.
Sure. Definitely over what they did overall in the in the first half.
Yes.
Because mainly Justin Upton didn't play.
Almost needed Malik's in the minors. So. Yeah.
But that sounds like a good list to me. Malik Smith stealing all those stolen bases at 40 in the second half.
Yeah. He may be a top three stolen base threat in the second half, especially with...
I'd say he's number one.
Especially with Mondesi going on the IL today, yep. And you don't really know how bad that looks with a shoulder injury. So
yeah.
That was his really only competition.
And really, I think he's... I like him more.
Than Alberto Mondesi?
I do. I like him more than... Mainly because of the value, because you can get Malik Smith.
For value, yeah. 100%.
And then you could trade away Alberto. And you got yourself a very nice setup.
Yeah. Malik needs to be owned in almost every league just based on his stolen base numbers.
Absolutely.
Alone.
Especially how his average isn't hurting you too bad anymore.
Yeah. I agree with that.
Yeah, buddy. But now the creepy people. The people that we're about to break some hearts.
And I think these are the people that require the most action. These are the people that you need to find a way to get off of your lineup and still gain value for. So hopefully you'll be able to find some of these trades to get these off for the playoffs so they don't hurt you and burn you down the stretch.
And who's the number one for you got over there?
It's actually a guy I liked preseason, and that's Carlos Santana. I think his value is just bloated so high, and I just don't see him producing at this level in the second half. I mean, mostly in the batting average department, he has been such an overachiever.
Mm-hmm.
His career has been filled with productive years, but his batting average has always been much lower. And he's a career 250 batting average player.
Yeah.
But he's sitting here at like 290 on the season. Like,
he's finally finding it.
My goodness. And I mean, I still think he'll probably play better than most of his career averages because he's gotten such a big head start.
Right.
But his home runs have never been at this rate either. He's only ever been between 18 and 34 in his career for a whole season. And he's been very consistently healthy. So there's not any fluke years in there where, oh, he had a 5, and so that's why he had a little lower number. No, you almost get 600 at-bats every year. So his RBI pace is for over 100, but yet he's never beaten 86 in a season as well. So it just puts into perspective how amazing he has been. But to be fair, his advanced stat profile just looks excellent, but his launch angle is 5 degrees less than his career average, yeah, even though his home run numbers are up.
If I had him, I'd trade him for Eugenio Suarez.
I think that'd be an excellent trade. Mm-hmm. I think that's the perfect one where it's pretty fair on both sides from a value perspective, but I think he wins so big with Suarez mm-hmm. down the stretch.
Yep.
I'm just playing the law of averages with Santana. A lot of sample size for his career, and I think he just regresses a little bit. And that Cleveland lineup is not terrible, and there's some people that could play better with Ramirez for sure, but I just don't see it. I don't see his numbers being this good second half.
Right on. I'll give you a name that I think you should get away from is Eduardo Escobar.
Yes.
Wonderful first half. Saved by his launch angle because he's not hitting the ball very hard. He's just consistently hitting it just right on those fly balls and playing in Arizona. His personal record for home runs is 23, and he's got a decent pedigree of home runs of his seasons played, and he's got 19 on the season. So is he on track to hit close to 30, or is he about maxed out? I say he's about maxed out. He's a career 261 hitter. I think good for him. He's already put together a great season for himself.
For sure, yeah, 100%.
Third base shortstop eligibility, last I checked, last I remember, I should say. And I would be trading him for Corey Sager. He is just primed to not perform at that clip.
I completely agree. I mean, when I was looking at his advanced stat breakdown, almost everything
looks like fluke.
Pretty much all the way across. But especially the fact that his expected batting average is at .249 on this year. Mm-hmm. So he's over almost 50 points elevated over what people would expect based on his production levels. Mm-hmm. Whew. And his career highs for home runs are 21 and 23, and he already has 19.
Yeah.
You might get 5 in the second half for right. him from a power standpoint.
Right.
So, and plus the fact that he doesn't contribute a lot of stolen bases from a middle infield position, I think really saps his value in my eyes as well.
Yeah. Good for you. Made bank on the first half.
Yeah.
Send him out and get Corey Sager.
I think you win on both halves with having maybe one of the most productive shortstop
combinations.
Like combinations for a one whole player for the whole year. If you do that, I think you'd be in such good shape.
And they're not. I'd trade him for Vlad if you need it at third base.
I think that'd be a much better investment. And I'm not even very big on Vlad, but that's a seriously better investment.
Yeah, because the next guy I got, and I'll just keep talking for a bit, is Elvis Andrews.
Mm-hmm. I completely
agree
as well.
With that first half, because his sprint speed is middle of the pack. It's not even like, oh, he's got 21 stolen bases, he must be super fast. No, it's middle of the pack, and that's why he hasn't had over 30 stolen bases since 2013. So we're getting about to his career numbers there. And like his home run total, too, is crazy. He's only hit he's only hit double-digit home runs once in his career.
Isn't it nuts? And he got like 20 that one right. time out of nowhere.
So, I mean, he's about capped out, too, my friend. So... Whereas Escobar, you may need a third baseman, so trade him for Vlad. Andrews is a perfect guy to ship away for Corey Sager. And there's mm-hmm. other shortstops, too. We just like to tell you kind of how our fantasy podcast works, so we use names in as we're going along. Yeah, and you definitely got yourself an upgrade there.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. I mean, I definitely looked at Elvis Andrews, and the first thing I saw was the same thing. That his sprint speed is so average, and his caught stealing numbers are so elevated over his career in general, even mm-hmm. when he was playing well, that I don't know how he keeps up the pace that he's on. There's no way on any level. Mm-hmm. Home runs and or stolen bases, batting average is probably going to survive. Runs will probably survive. But even I think the Texas lineup in general is overachieving for everyone.
And they're going to ship some people out. I don't know who all goes. It's probably going to be more like Chris Martin, Sean Kelly, and like Mike Minor stuff trades.
Yeah, it could be.
But, I mean, I'm sure they would want to move Chu and stuff like that, so...
I think that's just everything's prime for him. He might be my biggest creeper on the second half of the year.
Compared to what he did in the first.
Yes. He's still an ownable shortstop for sure, but you're not getting that production out of him in the second half.
Right.
I promise you.
So who are you creeping on over there?
I got a couple of names that really stuck out to me. One guy more than anyone is Jake Odorizzi. How did he do this for the whole first half of the season? I know who this guy is. He's been on my team every year, at least a little bit, for minutes, because mm-hmm. he would have little stretches of being awesome. But this whole first half, he's sitting there at one of the best pitchers in the whole league from an ERA standpoint with a whip that supports his general dominance, 11 wins on a great Twins team.
Yeah.
He will regress. And even through the second half, I mean, he had a 6, 9, 5, and a 15 ERA in four straight starts before he snapped back to it with a short five innings pitched 1.69 game. Ooh, I think we see him get right back to earth with about a 4.5 on the season, and he'll be up around closer to the 4.5 to 6 ERA area for extended periods in the second half. If you can dump him for somebody else, I think there's a million safer bets at pitcher to produce well in the second half. If not,
a million, you say?
1 million pitchers.
You heard it.
Literally, he'll be the worst one. I can't say that, but I think I would be feeling so blown away if he's even relevant in the second half, let alone if he still keeps his season to a degree where he should be owned.
Right on.
So that's not overly bold to say he's going to regress, but I really just don't think he's going to end up being a guy that you want to own, and so I think trade him as soon as possible.
Okay.
Another guy that I think is another starting pitcher that is also a guy that might regress is going to be Mike Soroka. He's pitched unbelievable, but I believe in him way more than Odorizzi, so I just want to be clear on that. Right. I think he'll still be an ownable pitcher, but 2.24 ERA for a guy with his stuff not being as dominant concerns me a bit. I mean, his 82 strikeouts in 96 innings is not great, and then you don't know about pitch counts and if he'll get removed later on in the end of the year because of his age. I haven't been monitoring that super close, but it's always a risk with these younger players. They run into their workload down the stretch. So I think there's just a lot of things that would indicate he might not be as good as what you think, especially being a guy that doesn't cover himself with a ton of strikeouts either to help you with the stats.
So he's got such a good lineup too, though.
Yeah, he does. And his wins will keep pouring in.
I see what you're saying. I'm just saying that I don't know what I would do with him. But I don't have that problem. So
it'd be hard. I mean, I have him in one league. I mean, it's easy to ride him out. I don't think you're going to get punished nearly as hard for having him on your roster. It'll probably be fine.
Yeah, he looked good in his start after the All-Star break. I know that much.
Yeah, he did. And I think he'll still be good.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't know how good.
Gotcha.
And then Chris Sale. I think he's also still a guy that he might be harder to dump for the value that you might get from him. And his K rate's still unbelievable. So I want to be very clear that his stuff is still sort of there, but his inconsistency this year just really concerns me.
Right, because you don't want inconsistency in the fantasy playoffs.
Oh, no, you don't. Not if he's going to have the chance to blow up with 2.15 ERA games in the playoffs when you really need him. I mean, that could lose you a whole playoff mm-hmm. run by himself.
Mm-hmm.
So he's just a guy I'd prefer to flip for somebody else that is less exciting from a name standpoint, but just might be more reliable down the stretch. I mean, if you can get a guy like Walker Buehler, that'd be great, but that's a much harder sell at this point. Aaron Nola might be another guy to go for who didn't have a great first half, but I think will play a little better in the second. I think there's just a lot of people that are a little bit better bets than Chris Sale.
Okay. Well, here's a couple names that I think have been on since week one for me. And I just want to bring them up again because I should.
Mm-hmm.
And mainly it's just like, hey, if you're listening to me and you're like, oh, that's crazy. They had such good years and they had such good careers. I'm not going to get rid of them. Week one, and then week two, sticking with them. Week three, here we are post All-Star break, and I'm telling you again that you messed up if you didn't listen to us and you still have Matt Carpenter or Giancarlo Stanton. Giancarlo Stanton was more of a gut feel for me because I've looked at his careers. I've never forgot his injury plagued seasons mm-hmm. in Miami, and I told everybody, like, look, he's due, and I got a gut feeling that it's going to be one thing after another, and it's been one thing after another, and he's still on the DL, and you could have got rid of him when, you know, he's had these. You can trade him in like 2 days if he's healthy. And you keep missing these windows. So now, I don't even know. You could probably still trade him and get some value while he's on the DL. But you're going to miss... You probably won't be back till past the trade deadline. So don't wait on that. But man, that sucks. Matt Carpenter, on the other hand, you've lost all value, in my opinion, of him.
Yes.
I wouldn't even have the headache of trying to deal him. I would just straight cut him. I don't even know if I'd waste a DL spot on him. But that I never enjoyed him as a pick. And... I don't know what to say. I can't believe you still have him, I guess.
The number of people that have him just blow my mind because the only thing I can think is fan favorite.
Oh, yeah.
Because you look at that stat breakdown, you change the nameplates on that guy, and if mm-hmm. his name was Garrett Cooper,
mm-hmm.
just random Miami Marlins guy, and he's hitting like that, he's owned in 0% of leagues.
Oh, yeah. Kesson Hira's sent back down if he's hitting like that.
100%.
So,
and I understand what he did counts for something, But with the fluctuation in his entire style is such a huge concern to me.
Right.
Like, what is he actually doing? Is he trying to be on base guy? Because he was really good at that.
Yeah.
And last year he hit a bunch of home runs and it didn't kill his batting average. I mean, it went down a lot, like 50 points for him, but it's still like 250. Now he's not hitting for power or for average, and I don't know what he's doing. So I agree with you. I think cut at this point with his age and
just everything. I mean, if you got a DL spot and you want to hold on to a hope for some rando reason, go ahead, I guess. But
I just think you could almost look at Tommy La Stella and be like, that's a better bench DL spot for me to have. And I don't even like him in the second half from an injury standpoint.
No, I mean, Marwin Gonzalez is a very good, much better player. And his owning percentage is criminal. And I'm not even talking about him in this podcast. But that guy's starting to rake it with Minnesota. He's been starting to rake. So he's got eligibility all over the map.
Yeah, Howie Kendrick's another guy I would much rather have over him, even though he's only owned in 50% of leagues. But I mean, he has some risks of underachieving a little bit more. He's not playing as much, but from what he's done, it's still just been better. I don't know.
Okie dokie. That's all I got for creepers. Do you got any more?
Nope, that about sums me up.
Well, then here's our segment where I participate in some starting pitching traditions here, and I join John where we give you double plays for the week if you need them, and you need that extra bit of strikeouts, or you need a win or two, or what have you. It's a popular thing to stream the pitchers that have two starts in a week. So, John, give me a double play.
I think my favorite double play is Daniel Ponce de Leon, actually, against Pittsburgh in the first start, against Dario Agrizal and Garrett Cole against Houston. You don't love the Garrett Cole matchup from a Houston standpoint, just because that's probably not going to be a win. But as a younger player like him, I have a lot of interest in his upside, and I think he's going to do well.
Okay. I never argue against these because I never use these, nor do I really care, but it is fun to do. So my number one is Merrill Kelly.
Merrill Kelly, eh?
Yeah. Not really on the hot streak you want to do it, but he's got Baltimore home. And then he's at Miami, so those are pretty tame matchups, so I can't imagine you getting hurt too bad. And then the one against Miami is Trevor Richards, and on the season, he's got only 3 wins, 88 strikeouts in 99 innings, 4.18 ERA with a 1.34 whip, and he's lost 5 of his last 6 games. So that sounds like you're in a good chance for a win there.
I would agree with that one.
And Merrill Kelly pitches for the Diamondbacks, who has a much better... Not much better, but a better team than Baltimore and Miami. So, there you go. That's my guy.
Nice. I think that makes sense.
I guess.
Yeah, I can see that.
Who's your double play?
I think the next one I'm going to go with is Trevor Richards from Miami. He started the year really well, and he's kind of not done overly well. But I think I have a gut feeling that he's going to be okay, and the Miami offense has been a little more sporadically successful than I've expected in the last little bit. I'm not expecting a bunch of run support, but I think White Sox and Arizona aren't the most unkind matchups. I mean, they're not friendly, I would say, but I like Trevor Richards.
That's hilarious. I literally based mine off of Trevor Richards pitching that game, Trevor Richards pitching this game. So my second guy, although he sucked on the season, is Von Nova. With a 5.6 ERA and a 1.54 whip. Totally know that. But White Sox have been playing better of late. And they actually have a decent lineup if you look at it. And he's got Miami at home with Trevor Richards. And like I just talked about him, and John just talked about him. So I don't know what you do with that now.
throwing a monkey wrench in there.
And then the second one against Martin Perez, who was super overrated and exaggerated for the first half of the first half. And now his wheels have fallen off all the way to the tune of 4.26 ERA with a 1.37 whip now. So he's come back to earth. And although Minnesota's a very good team, you got him at home. And I can see Von Nova not giving you a very good ERA through both starts, but pulling off 2 wins and sprinkling in enough strikeouts to be the equivalent of 1 game worth of a good strikeout pitcher.
I could see it. I mean, Nova's one of those guys that I've always had my eye on for years because I always view him a little better than what he really is. And I have to look at the stats and then calm myself on my expectations. But I've seen him string together a couple starts here and there where he looks really good. And so I could easily see it with Miami helping him out a lot and Minnesota getting through 1 good start there as well.
We'll see. I won't be playing either of them.
I don't feel extra confident either. I mean, but the Richards one, I would say, is a gut reaction from him. He's been struggling, but before that, he was doing a lot better. Mm-hmm. He had like 4 out of 5 starts under 2 ERA or something. So I'm just going to take a guess that he gets it back together. He's hit or miss, and he gets 2 hits in a row.
Okay.
I don't know.
And that's it. That's your double-double.
That's my double-double.
All right. Well, that takes us to the closing notes, where I close out the segment with some closer notes. And if you haven't been paying attention in Philadelphia, poor Hector Neris is really stumbling in the past couple weeks and killing me personally. But even before he started stumbling, rumor has it David Robertson's going to be back by the end of July. And you know how Kapler likes to mix and match with when he's got a healthy back end. With Neris starting to implode and David Robertson starting to be the guy that was going to be the closer, I could easily see David Robertson coming off of the IL here by the end of July and ending up the season as Philadelphia's closer. So keep an eye on him.
That would be super valuable. Anybody that's closing for the Phillies looks pretty good.
Yep. So that's it. Got any last words?
Not really. I mean, I guess just I'm going to play my world's smallest violin for myself here about having 3 closers yesterday all blow their saves in the same night. Nothing feels quite as bad as that moment when Carlos Martinez, Will Smith, and Rafael Iglesias all have big losses. I guess they might not have been blown saves, but they all give a bunch of runs in the same game.
Well, don't worry. I actually do worry. I don't know if Will Smith's going to be a closer much longer.
There's a real chance. But I picked up enough closers to where I'll be okay, even if he doesn't.
Way to do it. All right, that's it. We're signing out.
Good luck out there. Hopefully a happy second half is in line.
You got it. And a championship at the end.
Boom.